Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
The one and only JT O'Sullivan QB School in the house, live and in person. Thank you for coming by, man. How are you doing?
Man, fired up. This is it, man. Look at this view, the setup, pressure's on, draft season. Just a little quarterback talk, you know, what could go wrong?
Well, it happens to be a historic quarterback class. Lots of guys that could be going in the first round, potentially up to five. Some people even think six quarterbacks going in the first round. What's your overall impression?
I don't know. I'm going to temper this because we're just at the start, okay? But I probably am not as holistically high on this group as maybe the common theme, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think that there absolutely is some unbelievable talent at the top, and I'm intrigued about a number of guys. But I think when we get into the film part of it, I think everybody has some things that, you know, depending on where they end up, could be some significant issues. And as you know, a couple of us are still recovering from like poor evaluations in the past, I see similar like potential pitfalls here. And so I'm nervous for myself to make some of these comments and have those kind of takes. But I think the good thing, at least selfishly for me, is I try to go back to the film and be like, hey, this is what we saw. Like, we can share this. We can't project where someone's going to be or what their landing part, you know, what their situation is, what their talent is around them. But we can say, hey, this translates to Sundays most often. And you just kind of, you know, cross your fingers and hope that they end up in a good situation.
So what you're saying is we're seeing ghosts.
I'm seeing ghosts. we're probably seeing similar ghosts,
I love that you brought that up, because it is that moment when you're in the film and you're, again, we try and be positive. We try and look for the things that they can do, not the things that they can't necessarily. We don't want to focus on those, but as we go through that and we see those things, and I was like, man, I was really excited about that guy that didn't work out, that had the same thing, and it just sort of tempers that expectation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if this is a word. I know I've said it on a couple of my stuff, but like, I'm so scarred by Herbert and like what that was. And like,
you missing, and me both,
man. Yeah, I mean, like, I know we're not the only ones, but like, I can go back to almost yesterday, and I literally can. We can go back and watch, like, I can listen to the video nightmares if I want. But like, you watch it and you're like, hey, you know, can he not do it, or are they not asking him to do it? And then you realize that they weren't asking him to do it. And you know, they get fired, and they, you know, like, but then you turn on some of this film and you're like, can they not do it, or are they not asking him to do it? And like, and again, I've had people who have been around Herbert now that are like, hey, he's a unicorn. Like, how, you know, like, and to miss a unicorn on film makes me feel like, man, what the hell am I doing here? Like, this seems bizarre. And so I'm just hesitant. I guess I tread lightly, or lighter than I used to, when I used to think, hey, if I watch the film, that's a Sunday throw. Dude can make a Sunday throw on Sunday. Like, those are transferable. Where now, you know, you just don't know. I'm certainly less certain, and it just feels like, you know, I hedge those things, but also, I think this the game has evolved faster than maybe the evaluation process has evolved with some of these quarterbacks, where you look at the system and how they're played, and damn near every guy at the top of this draft has some what I would classify as system constraints or issues. And so trying to make sense of that and project it just makes me feel uneasy. Like, you know, once we get past essentially Caleb, and even Caleb, I would say those system concerns, even though guys have come through that system and had success on Sundays, it's still, there's still concerns for me.
Well, beyond system, there's also supporting cast too, which matters. But EJ and I were having this discussion basically since he flew in yesterday of how much does it matter? Because there's been guys like Burrow where it's like, okay, yeah, they're throwing a Jamar and Jefferson and they had four NFL offensive linemen and an NFL running back. And, you know, people kind of held that against Burrow of like, well, anybody would look good, right? And I would say the same thing happened with Stroud. Oh, anybody would look good behind two, you know, pro offensive tackles and throwing to maybe the best receiving core in all of college football. And then both of them come in the NFL and they're great because good throws are good throws and good reads are good reads. But then on the flip side of the coin, you know, you've got Bryce where, okay, he did, it wasn't the same caliber of supporting cast as last year at Bama versus earlier in his career at Bama. But then he didn't have any supporting structure in Carolina, right? And he wasn't able to overcome that. You have guys this year, Drake May, where it's like that North Carolina team around Drake May is just not very good. And so what I want to get an answer from you, or at least, you know, some sort of philosophical musings, is supporting cast something that we can factor in for a quarterback evaluation but not hold it against them? Or is there something that we can actually take away from a strong supporting cast or a weak supporting cast in college that has a tangible effect on the grade?
It's a tough one. Like, and I think you nailed a bunch of good examples on both sides of it. I think most often I think Burrow, like, that's just ridiculous, like the dudes he was thrown to. But he also, and this is the part that I come at it from a super quarterback-centric lens, is does the quarterback elevate the huddle? Do they make that offensive unit better? And so for Burrow, and that, I mean, that was such a special offensive year, and I'm smile thinking about it. But, like, guys this year, like Michael, like Penix, and guys like Jaden, those are special perimeters. Like, you're dealing with special, special talents. I think both those guys probably did elevate those units. And so, you know, I don't hold it against them for playing with good teammates. You know, when it comes to that, I think you can try to make sense of it. We're saying, like, hey, if we're throwing jump balls up to neighbors, or like he's destroying someone, like, that's just not going to be open like that in the league. But I think the flip side of it is where you can actually make a more meaningful take, where you say, hey, Caleb Williams is playing with essentially no, you know, for sure early NFL draft picks this year. Did he, you know, was he able to still be himself, even if you maybe say, hey, there was a production drop off or that wasn't quite the same performance? And similar with Drake May. Now, the Drake May thing, I think, is, I'm going to put it in its own kind of maybe Drake May box. But I think you can absolutely elevate your stock even more if you're playing with guys that aren't Sunday type difference makers. So, yeah, I don't hold it against them, but I think it's more impressive when Caleb Williams goes out there and makes circus throw after circus play after ridiculous, you know, off platform, you know, pocket movement, all sorts of craziness when those guys aren't top 10 picks.
I love that slice because it's, like you said, like you both said, it's such a difficult question. You end up feeling like you're pulling apart the balls of string to kind of get to the middle. And that makes it feel like, regardless of the situation, you can still take things away. Because that's what I believe in terms of when you're looking at physical skills and everything else. Yeah, the receivers are great. They're still hitting them in the chest. And yeah, they're not going to be that open. And then you have to sort of dig for the window. And maybe that's pulling apart the ball of string. But that idea of, yes, they had great talent. Did they do very well with it? And was it the talent elevating them or them elevating the talent? And that's when I get down to some of the wide receivers we talk about in this draft. And who was really pulling the string here? Was this, you know, Xavier Leggett bailing out Spencer Rattler or vice versa? And where does that, it's a slider. There's no absolute answer, but I love that nuance of being able to say, hey, how did they play within their structure, good or not? Did they push that slider up, or maybe that was carrying them a little bit?
Yeah, and I want to piggyback the personnel element and be especially on the perimeter, because it's so easy to see with the wide receiver production. And this was magnified for me this year because my process was a little different just because of some YouTube issues, but the college.
Oh, you too. Yeah.
The college pause on watching college film in the fall was different than what I'd done in the past. In the past, if there was an interesting game on Saturday, I wanted to see the all 22 on Monday and was fortunate enough to have a lot of access like that. That wasn't the case this year. And so I basically put the college film on the shelf. And so after the playoffs, going back and getting ready for the draft and watching all the college all 22, the difference in the game was magnified for me. And so what I mean by that is the system and the way that these guys are playing is so much more, it's a different type of football than they will be asked to play, many of them, on Sundays. And it, for me, an example of that, and it's kind of backed up anecdotally by, I'm fortunate enough the last couple of years to go to Elite 11, right down the street. You guys probably should go.
We should.
Not only is it cool to see these guys throw in person, but it's a relaxed environment, but you do get a lot of like these conversations. Like we go out, you got to eat.
Sure.
Well, I'm going to sit down at the table where I want to get to know the guy who's, you know, I'm going to have to be talking about in a couple months. And so just talking ball with them and asking them really specific questions like, hey, are you coached to take a specific drop and throw on a specific hitch, like the footwork, the timing, the rhythm that was the NFL two decades ago? Is that what it is at the tip of the spear in college football? And the overarching kind of response is not really. It's a lot more air raidy. And for me, what that means is grass, space. You know, do you have enough time to buy time to throw this ball into this space? And so it's not that that isn't a thing in the league. There are elements of that. You can see cliffs kind of like bones in certain things.
Sure.
But most teams are still rhythm, timing, anticipation, tight windows. And so if there are some systems that I think do that better than others, I think that honestly gives you a little bit of an advantage going into the league. It's not do or die, but it is hard to be like, hey, to ask explicitly Michael Penix Jr., when you're reading these deep posts that you're ripping over the top, throwing these big balls down the field, is the drop and gun 5-1 hitch first quarter, let it rip? Nah, not really. Like I can backpedal. If I like this matchup, I can do this. I know in quarters I might get this. So I can kind of like buy time and take like 7 and gun. Like that shit's just not going to, you don't see that shit in Sundays. Like that doesn't work. Like everything is so rigid. And so I can appreciate the Washington offense. Like it's really cool. I really do think it's a very unique one of one at the tip of the spear in college football. But I also think it would really struggle on Sundays. And so,
well, we're going to see because Grubb's now in Seattle. So yeah. We'll see how he changes it, right?
Yeah. And I'm sure he's adaptive enough to be more kind of concise. But like Geno's not going to be able to just like take 7, pedal, hope your number one top 10 pick, you know, runs, blows by, you know, Oregon State. Like that's just not going to work.
One thing that I've also tried to pay a lot more attention to over the years is how the hashes change everything. And it almost feels like offenses structurally are entirely split in two between field and boundary just because there's so much space. And there's a lot of quarterbacks and there's a lot of offenses that don't have the firepower at quarterback to throw anything outside the numbers from the far hash. Like they just can't do it. And so when I look at, say, the East Carolina game for J.J. McCarthy, and they're running flood to the field from the far hash and he's ripping a 7 perfectly. Again, they didn't do it that often, but I'm like, oh, that's in the tool. That's an NFL throw, but it's harder than an NFL throw because it's from that hash. And so I've tried to pay attention more to that over the years of how the difficulty level changes on certain throws from NFL versus college. How much do you factor that in yourself?
Like again, anecdotally, I look at it a lot, and it's even magnified when it's in person. So a thing that I used to use, this is probably too into the weeds for many people, but I used to coach high school football, and when we would warm up against other teams in high school football, you'd like come out at the same time. It's like this awkward, like kind of like back and forth. I used to get really excited when I would see their quarterbacks warming up in the middle of the field. Okay, so if you're throwing routes on air, like to warm up, and someone's throwing the ball from the middle of the field, to me, that shows a significant lack of detail. Like you're not paying attention to detail because a very small percentage of plays are played off the hash. Now, if they warmed up on the hash and then they moved to the boundary or to the field or to the boundary. I was like, oh no, these dudes have landmarks. Like, we're in deep shit. And then in the league, it's the same thing, because oftentimes in the offseason, you're warming up at high school fields. If you're moving the ball, that's 6 yards on the internal hashes, you're locked in, you're detailed. And even another one that takes it to the next level is if you see a team that plays under center a lot, and that quarterback is, say the wide receiver's running routes from the 20, if they're taking their drop from the 19, like they're playing the center depth, mm-hmm. Oh, these guys, this is like a professional unit. Like, they're really coached up. And so it absolutely matters, especially when you start talking about anticipation, timing, rhythm, because you have to be able to throw those essentially blind. Mm-hmm. It's a real feel rhythm thing that goes into it that I think takes a lot of attention to detail that you're absolutely right can get exposed. Go out there just for fun. You know, if you're not used to throwing a football, go out to your local high school field, mm-hmm. go line up on the hash or the boundary and throw it to the sideline, then try to throw it to the other sideline.
Yeah, it's really hard.
That's hard. That's a big boy throw.
Yeah.
That was, I mean, Drake May was doing that last year for me when I was watching Josh Downs' film. I actually posted a clip on Twitter because I was like, I'm just sitting here minding my business trying to watch Josh Downs. Drake May is over here with this arm arrogance, right? I mapped it out. It was like a 60-yard throw for a 27-yard completion because took it on the far hash left, rolled left, and threw it back right to the boundary, hit Downs in the chest. And it's like those throws, again, we're talking about just like, all right, he's got it. Like, he, when we say can make every throw in the NFL category, you see a throw like that that he made, that ball was flat. Like, there was no arc on that thing at all. And it's like, that's an absolute laser. And he was doing that last year. So those things do tend to translate. But I know a lot of other evaluators that are like super mad about the hashes. They basically have petitions to like even them up. Because,
oh, really?
Yeah, because it is two very different games when you're watching it.
Well, especially like if you're looking at offense where it's like, oh, we're going to major in FIB. And then we're always going to have a big post coming from the field because there's like a million yards of space. It's like, how real is that? You know, it's hard to translate it.
Yeah, I guess I always think of it from a head coaching perspective as a defensive gut mindset. Like, how do you better have FIB answers? Like,
yeah.
You better have an answer that puts the offense in a 50-50. Because if you make it easy, the game becomes so easy. The game is already easy. I always think of it as a 3-by. I think, first of all, I think in flanks. So, like, how you align your eligibles is how I think both offense and defensively. You better, you know, it's a 3-by-1 league. You know, it's 3-by-1 league damn near every single level. But some teams now, especially when you're watching like those super spread teams, like the Baylor, old school Baylor teams, are so stupid 2-by-2.
Yeah.
That there's so much space where you're like, obviously the ball's going to the yeah. slot. Like, just give me some inside leverage, homie. But like, that's just the way the game is played. And if that's how they're going to align, you got to take advantage of it. That's half of, you know, playing quarterback.
We did bring up Drake May. I kind of want to start with him because we'll go through all kind of the top, I don't want to say consensus top six quarterbacks because everybody's, you know, somebody's going to be a Spencer Rattler guy. Somebody's going to have Jordan Travis way up high, you know, but the most common top six, it's Caleb, it's May, it's Jaden Daniels in whatever order you want. Then you got Penix and Nix and JJ in whatever order you want. Some have two tiers, some have three tiers, some have four. But I want to start with May because I didn't think anybody was going to be more polarizing than J.J. McCarthy, but it kind of feels like Drake May is more polarizing than J.J. McCarthy. If you could kind of expand on what he does really well, and if he does go in the top three, maybe even the top two picks, why would he?
Okay. Well, let me preface this by saying I try to do a decent job of not seeing other people's stuff, if that makes sense. So when you say he's super polarizing, I mean, to me, he's been polarizing because I remember last summer people had him as the number one guy, or it was for sure this. And so I never necessarily thought that. I think the thing that he does really well that would make you think, oh, this is a top, you know, 10 pick, top guy potentially, are the splash highlight plays are that impressive. Like, there are plays you turn on every game, every half, he's going to make some play, some throw deep over the top, out of structure, scramble, throw into his left dot. You know, those types of plays are in every game. And that's, to me, why he kind of grabs the imagination of a lot of guys. He's also the prototypical guy, like big guy, athletic. You know, I think of those UNC quarterbacks, and maybe it's because of Sam Howell was there for so long running this, but like those quarterback draws, you know, he can run a little bit. Mm-hmm. But then you turn when you watch the film, and this is the part I always have a hard time with because I don't watch a lot of UNC highlights. You know, you're watching the All-22. There are just so many bizarre misses. Like, there really are. And it's not like, oh, man, that's like a, you know, a Brock Purdy Tua anticipation drift or end wrap. It's a – that's an RPO hitch, homie, and you just T-boated it at the guy's ankle, and it's dry, and it's September. And it wasn't close. It wasn't like, oh, if that was, you know, a big-time number one receiver, he could have caught it and scored. You just threw a hitch to the slot in the ground, and then the next series, you did it again. And it's just the consistency of it, to me, looks – he has a weird this is a trait that I don't love, and I don't love to label people, but he does it a little bit where he makes life harder than it has to be. And yeah, he doesn't have necessarily talent around him, but like the footwork, it just — and this is coming from someone who's not certified, okay, and I take a lot of shots at some cert people — but like the air raid world, the Phil Longo world that he was in for a while, to me is super loose with the footwork element of it. But even this year, it didn't look cleaner. It didn't look more consistent. It didn't look like he was balanced very often. Everything has fallen off. Everything has wasted movement. And when you put all that together and you watch game after game after game, you're like, dude, you just aren't – you can't have that many misses with that type of miss structure that often. You just don't see guys in the league. You don't see guys in the league skip hitches. You don't see guys in the league skip outs. And it's like, fuck, it's not, is it raining? You know, like I'm looking like in the box, like what are the conditions here? No, it's sunny. Damn, like it's just tough.
What I find interesting about the inconsistency, I don't want to say it's entirely tied to his feet, but there was a couple of those, and a lot of people said you got to watch the NC State game. That was the one that was like the prototypical like Trigma experience of like some amazing throws and some what the hell misses. And you know, when you talk about getting loose, there was a couple throws that he missed where it's like, okay, there's a little heel clicky. Didn't have like kind of just a light consistent bounce where he's keeping himself lined up at all times when he's kind of going from 1 to 2 to 3. He wasn't keeping himself aligned, so it's like I'm gonna throw my back foot way far back, and then he's kind of just — it's almost like he's cranked a little bit as he's throwing it. But then there were some reps where it's okay, he is perfectly aligned, he's got a good bounce, he's keeping himself completely on target, and then he rips it and you're like, there it is. And so when you look at somebody whose accuracy issues may or may not be tied to just consistent footwork, no pun intended, how fixable do you think that is for a young quarterback that maybe didn't grow up doing that, but when they're going to get to the NFL, let's say he goes to Kevin O'Connell, Minnesota, how quickly can they drill that into him where it's like, you need to be the same or at least as close to the same as you can on every single rep so that you're consistent, building that muscle memory, building that accuracy?
So this is a tough answer, okay? Because there are many variables that come into play. Yet where do you end up? Okay, y'all, offensive head coach, who's calling the plays? Is the head coach the quarterback's coach, the coordinator the quarterback coach? What kind of details going into it? Because not all places are the same. That's the jump. The system is going to be dependent too. The other part about this, and this is hard for people to get sometimes, but I'm sure you guys have seen it at some level. Not everyone is as committed as you would want. And that's no shot at Drake May. I don't know Drake May at all. I'm just saying generally, not everyone is going to spend their whole offseason going to a private quarterback coach to grind on their footwork, their balance, their biomechanics, like you would hope. You know, if you're a diehard fan, you would be like, oh, my quarterback getting paid, that dude is going to – you're not going to Cabo. Like, he's going –
That's what Purdy did, right?
He's going to Florida, and he's, you know, grinding in March. Not everyone. Okay, that's just the truth of it. And so if you're invested and if the organization's invested and that's a priority for them, because some places aren't. I think a lot of people would be shocked how many quarterback coaches never really talk about the throwing mechanics. It's all about, hey, this is the matchup this week. This is the read. This is what percentages say first down that they're doing this. And so it just depends, really. But can it be fixed? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've seen guys take their kind of footwork and elevate them to a whole nother stratosphere. And the only thing I would add with Drake May, and I try honestly to stay out of this world because it's not my strength, but I will say when I mention it, his stroke to me, like how he throws it, it seems like it's just not as natural as some other guys. Like it's just a little bit like, like there is some wasted movement in the back end of it where it feels like
it's a little bit of a loop, right?
Yeah, and I don't know if loop is the right word to think about it, because I think that the loop think part of it is fine when it's like symmetrical and repeatable. I guess that's the thing. I'm saying sometimes it gets longer and it doesn't look symmetrical, and then you see the miss radius widen. And so the consistency of the stroke would be something that I think is noticeable when you start watching games with Drake May.
And I think that's probably a really good summary of May's game, is that he's tremendously physically talented. Like you said, he's got prototype size. He does have the arm. You said it. When he lines it up, that ball absolutely goes. We were talking about those throws. He can run it. It reminds me of Justin Herbert as a runner a lot. He's tall. He's athletic. He doesn't do it all the time, but when he takes off, he's good and fast. I mean, he can certainly get yards. And then in the sort of growth area, it's just inconsistency, and some inconsistency of arm mechanics, definitely some inconsistency of feet. And then you see the inconsistent accuracy. And those are the things to me that feel like they'd have to be addressed first, because those are drive killers in the NFL, right? You talk about skipping a throw or not hitting the easy layup, not taking what the defense gives you because you just flat out missed it. You can't afford to do that all the time. We've seen quarterbacks like that and they're not effective. So he's going to have to clean that up. But in terms of tools, he's tall. He can see it. He can rip it. We just kind of want to see that more often and strung together.
One of my favorite, I laugh because I tell the story a lot, and I send this gif to my oldest son a lot. It's a joke. Okay, you got to get the humor part of it. Try. I know most jokes aren't good if you have to say it's a joke.
Right.
But Moneyball, I love that movie, Moneyball. And there's a line in there, I think Brad Pitt says, and I might have sent it to you guys before, but like, if he's such a good hitter, why doesn't he hit good? It's like one of my favorite things to say. Yeah. And I coach a lot of youth baseball. And I coach a lot of youth baseball, and I say that a lot. Like, if he's such a good hitter, why doesn't he hit good? And my thing, and this is not a shot necessarily specifically at Drake May, but I think it is within, when you think of him in what I would consider like the top-ish group, and so we'll say like the top 2-3 tiers of these guys, if he's such a good quarterback, why doesn't he throw good all the time? Like it just, because there are splash plays where you're like, God, like, that's our
there
dude.
It is.
Let's
there it
go.
Is.
Yeah. Like, we're balling. And then there are throws where you're like, what the fuck, homie? Like, yeah. What, dog? Like, I couldn't imagine the wide receiver running back into the huddle or to the line of scrimmage or like back to the wide receiver room is like, yo, what? Like,
like, I'm not 15 feet tall.
No, like right here. Like, I seen it. Like, hey, yo. And so like that you can't fake that funk in the league, man. You skip a couple hitches.
You know what it kind of reminds me of? Wyoming Josh Allen.
Really?
Where, because Josh had some throws at Wyoming where it's like, we do want to keep the ball in the field, you know? Like,
no.
I'm not saying he's going to be Josh Allen, but there was a couple games of Josh at Wyoming, especially because he still kind of has that sugar high kind of tendency sometimes where he would just let it go and it's like, oh, yeah, that's a three-run homer right there. Yeah,
no, you know? No doubt. Put it in the front row. And Josh, to me, it's tough because it's hard when the two best players in the league, or we'll call them like two of the top best players, Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, are really freaks of freaks of freaks of freaks, yeah. Right? And like generational guys, and that term whatever sucks, but they're that kind of special. But Josh is that perfect example of a guy who, for whatever reason, and there's no shot at Wyoming, I watched him. I was working at San Diego State at the time. We watched him play. We played against him multiple times, I think 1 year. He wasn't polished. He wasn't. And so the growth, the polish that he made is kind of the standard, right? Mm-hmm. That everyone's like, oh, if you can improve like Josh Allen, improve like, well, yeah, that's a one-off, you know? But could Drake May, if he made the same jump with the kind of how Josh plays the position, the efficiency that he plays with now from within the pocket, if Drake May could make that same jump, hell yeah, that'd be awesome. Like, yeah. But you could overlay that to anyone. You're like, hell yeah, that'd be awesome.
And I think that skips back to what we were talking about at the beginning of, as we're watching these guys and you have those highs, you also go, okay, well, where's the bottom of the slider, right? I need to, because I was high on X guy last year and landed a situation, it didn't work. So where's the top? Where's the best case scenario? And like you said with Drake, he could develop like Josh. But again, I caution people about that because that is historic. Like, Josh is the only guy that's done it in terms of metrics from where he was at Wyoming to where he is now in the league. He's a unicorn. Like you said, unicorn earlier, development wise, he's a unicorn. So as we see all these guys, and with Drake, when I was watching the tape, it was those nagging things of like, all right, there's the high. oh, but it comes with these lows. Where's he going to land most often? And then it goes back to the consistency point.
Now, I don't want to entirely shit on all these guys, right? Because they're all going to be first round picks, and they all have a lot of traits we like. But I do want to transition to shitting on Jaden Daniels to keep everything even, right? No, no, we love Jaden. God, going back to midway through the season when Jaden was seen as like, oh, he's a fringe first round pick, EJ was like, are you sure about that?
No, he's not.
But he also has a lot to like and some things that to clean up, to put it diplomatically. When and if Jaden goes in the top three, what are the traits that jump out to you that justify that?
So I would say he's definitely going in the top three, would be my take. If that's, you guys disagree.
He's going that high. It's more so why, right?
My thing with Jaden, and I always like to preface this by being the guys that I spent the most amount of time with at Elite 11, I feel like I have a bias to. Like, I just, that's the way I feel. I came away really impressed with Jaden as a dude and as a person. I was super stoked that he had such a good year. You know, I, as a, you know, being West Coast guys, I think I have a picture in my mind of him at Arizona State and dealing with whatever that Arizona State experiment
was.
It was
a lot.
Yeah.
It was a lot.
But, I mean, he was also thrown to Brandon Ayuk, you know. And so, like, part of it is making sense of that for him. But I think he is coming from the Brian Kelly experience. Can be a lot of different things to a lot of different players, specifically for quarterbacks, but I think it's a structured, rigid system that asks him to do specific things, and I thought he did a great job of doing what they asked him to do. So if you want to get on him for throwing so many inside fades, well, he's not calling the plays, right?
And they work.
And he's throwing to fucking dudes. Like, yeah. I'm throwing inside fades too. Like, why don't make the defense not play middle field closed man, and we'll stop throwing inside fades, right? So that part of it, and then the part of it where, you know, like, I think it's fair to say, like, hey, in the league, it's going to be hard to just say one, two, run, and I'm the fastest guy in the field. You still might be fast. You still might be one of the best quarterback runners in the league, but those dudes are fast too. Like, it's just different. And so he's not going to be able to just go get 60 or, you know, go have, you know, 100-plus yard games every single week. I don't think. I think you see guys who can do it, but I don't think that's who he wants to be either. And so that balance on what that looks like, that harmony for him to continue to develop from within the pocket, because I do think he throws it pretty well, everything except like the heater, like the fastball.
Yeah.
Everything else I think is pretty good. I really like his stroke. I think it's super consistent. I think he throws with nice touch, but making sense of, hey, I'm one of the best athletes on the field, like I'm a deer, to okay, let's be smart with it. You know, what does that look like? And it takes everybody learns that differently, and you know, what it looks like for him. But, you know, I got a lot of good things to say about Jaden. I think he had it. I was fun to watch him from a distance thrive in such a, on that platform.
I get kind of whiplash going from watching May to Jaden, because May obviously is kind of funky and loose, and when it all clicks, it's amazing. And then you go to Jaden, and like every throw looks the same. The release is snappy and quick. Everything's on time. Hits the back foot. Like, he's decisive. In a lot of ways, he's like a quarterback's quarterback, right? It just looks clean and good. The one thing that I'm still trying to figure out, and again, this is not a knock on him. It's kind of goes back to your point at the beginning. It's like, are they asking him, are they not asking him to do it because he can't, or are they not asking him to do it because they just don't want to? It's the throws over the intermediate middle of the field, the deep middle of the field. They were very much an offense that worked more towards the boundaries. And that's what I'm trying to figure out with him, is like, athletically, arm talent wise, like, yes, obviously he can work the middle of the field. They just didn't have him do it. What was your kind of read on that?
This is a perfect segue back to what we talked a little bit about earlier. It's frustrating from this lens, of evaluator lens, because those dudes are trying to win football games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like, putting yourself in the lens of the play caller, the play designer, the offensive architect, why? Kind of like Michigan. Like, why would we do that? We don't have to do that. Like, we've got dudes and they're doing this. We're going to do this. Jaden throws this ball great. let's do that. And, you know, in the league, you're going to have to play within the numbers. And so you that part of it is frustrating to see. And I don't have a good answer for you. I think that from the little that I know him, he is super coachable. He's doing exactly what they asked him to do. When you say, you know, really decisive, to me, that's a compliment to both the coaching and to Jaden, because that's polish. Like, he is super efficient, effective. The stroke is super consistent. He's able to be precise and surgical, throw into tight windows sometimes when those on those underneath throws that are, you know, league-ish throws. And I just, my thing about it, and it's hard because I think of it more, I guess I would say it's more a system issue than necessarily a Jaden issue. And until proven otherwise, that's what I would think. But who knows? You know, maybe we go out there and he's Russell Wilson and he never throws it over the middle and I look like an idiot. You know,
unless he wins the Super Bowl, then you look smart. Well, like Russ.
Depends. until he's not.
Yeah. Until he's not.
But like, it's just, it's one of those things for me where, again, it's hard because when you, I try to hold the hat of quarterback and play caller. And as a play caller, why would I ask my guy to go full field read? You know, there's no shot at Kurt. Like, I love Kurt Warner. He's my dude. He's a dude. But like, if we don't have to go full field read, why would we go full field read? Why wouldn't we go, hey, the top 10 pick over there, he's got a go route. If that's not there, throw the hitch. If that's not there, you run, buddy. It's the SEC. You're the best athlete on the field. Like, go ahead. Let's do that. Like, you don't, you know, it's all about the Jimmys and the Joes when it comes to that part of it. And I think people overcomplicate it because they want it to look like their experience or how they played on Sundays or how they see Sundays. And Sundays are different. It is a different game. And that's, again, we've already talked about it. It's tough to overlay the system because they're not asking him to do that.
Yeah, things I love about Jaden Daniels as we try and make that projection is the consistency. We just talked about Drake May lacking that consistency, and where I see it especially, he's got that great stroke and you see all those great balls down the field to Neighbors and Thomas and everything else, but in the short stuff, he is always over his feet. He's always got his shoulders in the right place, and that ball is delivered where the ball carrier can get yak. And that's so important to me. And a lot of people go, oh, it's a swing screen. It was a little, you know, it's a little middle tall screen. It doesn't matter where you throw it. And I'm like, no, it really matters where you throw it. It's the little things. You were talking about those preparation pieces. And he is so machined there. He increased the level of his play more than anybody else over the past two seasons. You look at him in his first year at LSU, and it was like, okay, cool, like, got some things to work on. You look at the leap he made to where he played last year, overall, the sum total of decision making and obviously the production. So you talk about it being coachable, and the fact that he's got that improvement, he's dialing in, he's got really good size. Like, he's not the bulkiest guy, but he is a tall guy, so he has at least the ability to see over.
He's like 10 more pounds. I just really worry about him getting bigger, folded.
Tall, and he knows how to use the leverage. All of those things bode really well. And then you talk about, you know, meeting him and talking to him and that he's really coachable. That just sort of pushes that up to the next level. Like, he's willing to do what he needs to do to be good where he goes. And the NFL is going to be different, but he's got that willingness, and we've seen that change already. And that gives me hope, I guess, that can continue.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I would add to that, about the whole like slender build type thing, is the other part that makes me a little nervous is that when you think about guys who run at that position in the league, they're usually not only world-class dynamic fucking unbelievable athletes, which he is, but they also usually have like a slippery vibe. Like, you almost never see Lamar get hit. Yeah. Never really, like, even this year, like Bryce, like, you don't really see Bryce, you know, he's slipping a lot of jabs, you know. Mm-hmm. Justin maybe is a guy who will run into a collision on accident every once in a while. Jaden Daniels has some like roadrunner like vibes, where, like, he's a little out of control. Like,
oh, there's a brick wall, I'm gonna run right into it.
A little out of control, right? So that part of it, I think, and I think those are coachable things when you learn, like, yo, we just invested the number two pick in you, homie, you're not running into the fourth corner in the second preseason game, we don't need that, you know. Yeah. Those types of things. But you know, I think that Jaden has done a great job of putting himself in a great position to be successful. Now, we'll see what happens, where he goes, and, you know, then it's a whole nother crapshoot. The thing that you touched on that I haven't touched on yet that I want to make sure we touch on is that trajectory of improvement. So that idea that you get better and better every single year, that used to be a real core tenet of mine. Like I used to hold that really, really as an important feature. And I think that was too much of a coach in me and a player in me as opposed to a projector. So I, you know, again, you get, you hold your scars in this world. And so a guy like Brock Purdy to me is someone who shoots to the top of my mind when I go, hey, he didn't get better in college. I think the film for Brock would be, you know, had some nice moments as a younger player and then kind of declined for whatever reason. And you can go into that whole different show, but like that part of it of projecting that just with the overlay of, hey, it gets better every year, just going to keep getting better. Well, not really. Like, we'll see. I think it's a good trait to have. You sure as hell better than the opposite, but it's not as important as I think I once held it as a player and a coach, because as a coach, that's like a core tenet. Like, yo, we need to get better every single year. As a player, hey, what am I doing this offseason to get better, get better, get better, get better? Because, you know, you got all these things about someone's taking your job and all that type of shit, where in reality, you know, it's a reset. It's a fresh reset. We'll see what it looks like wherever he goes.
I think as far as fits go, again, I'm so scarred by Herbert and Mahomes that I'm just like, give me the big, strong guy with the big arm and little things that we could fix. I can fix you, right? But if he goes at 2, at worst, he's going at 3. But if he goes at 2, I do have confidence that he's going to succeed there because of what he did so well at LSU. I think it kind of translates to what Cliff is also going to have him do with the Commanders, which is, hey, we're going to use him in the run game to scare them into giving us middle field close structures. And then we got Terry and Jahan Dotson. Like, if we want to throw inside fades, we can throw inside fades. Like, we can absolutely do that. And so I think a lot of the stuff that he did with Kyler, because Kyler also throws a beautiful fade, right? And so everything Cliff did was to basically set those up. I kind of feel like Jaden fits that type of system.
Yeah, I mean, I self admit I'm literally terrible about talking about fit, but I will say that I know Cliff more than I know most of those other guys, and I will just say that I hope that Cliff re-enters the league, re-enters the play calling world with a more robust edge plan. And what I mean by that is, I don't think it's advantageous in the league or at any level of football now to have open edges as much as Cliff would love to. Like, okay. And what I mean by that is tackle. No one, yeah. Wide receiver, and or whatever, open edge for the tackles. And so I think if he's learned his lesson or learned a lesson to be a little bit more multiple, you don't have to be a fucking 13 personnel team, but just sniffer, you
have
know,
something.
Movement, like make the quarterback say, okay, I'm not an issue over here, I can be hot over here, as opposed to open edge, both sides. It's just a tough world to live in. Yeah. It's easier in lower levels of football because they don't have as much shit. It's not as exotic. Third down, open edge, and you do that 5 times, you're going to see 5 different crazy fucking exotic looks.
Mike McDonald will eat you alive. Yeah.
I mean,
right?
they salivate at that. Yeah. And so that is what I get most nervous about with Cliff. Now, has he learned his lesson? We're all going to find out together. I honestly would be surprised, but not. You know, I'm hoping yeah. that it is.
Well, the man Cliff coached at USC, as of the day of recording this, we haven't gone to the pro day yet, but we're going to go 10 minutes down the road to USC's pro day tomorrow. Caleb Williams. He is the standard that everybody has held to in this class. He is almost certainly going at the first overall pick. I remember watching some videos he did of the Notre Dame game last year of Caleb. And even back then, you were like, oh, my God, like, this is different. Assuming he goes first overall, what are the things that pop out about his game that justifies that selection? And what would you say is his superpower?
Ooh. I mean, damn near everything he does is pretty awesome. It really is. I don't know how you I can tell the people that have hot takes the opposite way that we're talking about him just haven't watched the film. That's just straight up truth, because he is that special in so many different lanes. So I think the thing that jumps off is his playmaking ability, his creativity, his off-platform shit. He does crazy arm angles for fun. Like, just fuck it for fun.
But he'll hit it too. Yeah.
Jump throws, hook shot throws for fun. Like, and get the completions. And it brings a smile to my face. Like, I just feel like he's super sharp. That system to me is a fun college system, and there's no shot at Lincoln. It's Air Raidy based, but it's gapped runs, and he hasn't quite found his footing at USC like they did at Oklahoma. So they're not the same up front. They certainly weren't as talented this year everywhere except for Caleb. And so he's playing a little this year. I felt like he played a little hero-y more than he necessarily had to. Got some hero vibes. Like, you don't want to get rid of the hero. Like, the cape is awesome. Put it on, dog. Do you. But don't do you on 3rd and 23, you know, or don't do you when it's stupid. Don't do you when you're down 10 and you just need to punt and regroup. And so that part of it, I think, is something that will come the more and more he plays. And being in a different system that's a little bit more than just a napkin. Like, it's going to be more robust immediately. The first install will be more than they ran in a game in the league. And so that part of his development, how he hits and what the system fits with him, but any system's going to fit with him. Like, he's that good. I mean, he makes every throw. I personally love his ability to, it's not just create like bail, like recess. It's not there. Okay, I have to move, reset, not there, spin out, recess, flip, full speed sprint, you know, like crazy back across. Like, those are normal. And he throws all the clubs. We haven't talked much about like the different types of throws, but he has every throw off of all platforms. And it's just I'm excited for him. It's one of those things where I think people, because he's been around for a little bit, even though he's so young, people still kind of, and maybe it's because he's on the West Coast, people don't quite get how good he is. If that's possible, you know, I really, and maybe it's because of Justin Fields in Chicago and that whole whatever issue, but like, he's going to be good immediately, and it's going to be pretty awesome to watch.
Yeah. He's one of those players that, like you said, you try and stay away from other people's analysis. And I tried as best I could to do that with Caleb when I finally sat down with a sort of clean sheet to say, all right, what's really here, and done games from last year. And I really started in on this year. Everybody talks about the offensive system. Everybody talks about the hero ball. Best line I heard at the combine was, it looks like he's trying to hit a 5 home run shot every time. Like, you just can't. He was trying to make up that entire gap. But when you just sit down and watch it and you kind of like let it roll over you in entirety, and you talked about Drake is going to make one of those plays every game, every half, and he is. And sometimes it's 2 or sometimes it's 3. When you watch Caleb's tape, you get done with a half of notes, and it's this long, and 8 of them are in red, and you're like, oh my God, I haven't seen 4 of those before. And then you go to the next half, and it's the same. And then you go to the next half, and it's the same. And you're like, the volume, like, just looking at the length of my notes when I got done with Caleb, I was like, dude, that's just different. Like, yes, other people in this class can do some of those things sometimes. Like you said, he does almost all of those things all the time. And then it feels like the reverse has happened. People have gotten tired. He has been around, and they take those few negatives and they go, well, he can't play in structure. And it's like, it's not can't. There's plenty of good opportunities. In fact, one of the things I did in those notes was very like prominently note in structure, hit this play on time. You talk about windows and timing. Like, every time he did that, and he came out with 8-9 throws, you know, that I can show anybody multiple examples of for, I'd say, 8 or 9 routes that are the basis of NFL offenses that he throws on time. So the whole on time, off time narrative is kind of junk. And I think the more you look at Caleb's tape, the more of those you just kind of debunk. It's not that he can't do it. It's that he can do it, and he can do this too, and this too, and this too. And that's what really sets him apart in this class, is nobody else can do all of those things at those levels.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think about that shit at all, about not being able to play on time or structure. I think he totally can.
100%.
I think the thing that scares some people is that they look at like time to throw stuff, sure, and like, well, why is it so low? Fucking Justin does the same thing, holds on to the ball.
It's so different.
It's not the same. PTSD. So different. That is what
it's
that
the,
is.
It's like, I don't understand. Like, we're barely watching the same type of thing here. Like, And so that part of it is not an issue for me at all. I think the thing that rubs some people the wrong way, maybe not, and this is no shot at other parts of the country, but like, the reality is not all regions are the same. And so if you're, you know, if you're uncomfortable with a dude who paints his fingernails or a dude who cries, you know, I would probably give you 2 middle fingers, but like, that's the truth for some people. And so you got to make sense of that. Like that, that's not, I'm not going to hold your hand in saying, you know, the kid, the dude is, you know, emotional. I personally love it. I would not want someone who's not invested.
You want them to care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like that, I've never been a guy who knocks someone for bad body language. First of all, because I had terrible body language, but also because it's a visual, tangible representation that someone is invested. Like they give a shit. And I want everyone, that's the kind of passion, obsession that I think is, you know, you need to make a career kind of role. And so I'm excited. You know, is it the ideal situation for him to go where he's going to go? You know, absolutely not. You know, that's just the
truth. It's better than it was 2 years ago. That's for damn sure.
Well, I mean,
it's better than it was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see, you know, like sure. The track record is the track record. You know, if I could pick where he would go, that's just not what I would want for him if I was like a, you know, that in that thing. But is he good enough to make it work there? I think he is. And time will tell. You know, I think that there are some real hurdles that he will have to overcome from an organizational standpoint there. But, you know, is there, no one else has as strong of a chance to do it as he does, in my opinion, in this class, for sure. Maybe the last couple classes, many other classes.
On the time to throw thing, and this is just a point I want to make for people, because people put that number out there as if it means more than it does. And people interpret time to throw as indecisive or can't read a defense. When you're watching him play, how I interpret that time to throw is not as a negative. I see it as a reflection of just how unreal gifted he is at manipulating a pocket and buying more time within the pocket. It's not just he can spin out and make throws on the run, and obviously he does, but his spatial awareness, and there's some throws where you see where, okay, he gets to 8-9 yards deep, he's trying to give his tackles some workable landmarks, edge is starting to get a little bit on him, and so he'll step up a little bit to bait the edge back under, and then boom, put foot in the ground, get back to 9 or 10, and he's literally just trying to make his tackles have better angles, and it results in him sitting in the pocket for like 3.5 seconds, but he's in the pocket. He's waiting for stuff to develop. He's trying to manipulate it to give his offensive linemen, who are not great, better angles to work with, and we somehow knock him for having good enough pocket skills to hang in there behind a not great offensive line and then still deliver the ball. So it's like, what is it? Is his offensive line so bad that he's getting sacked immediately, or his pocket skills so good that his time to throw is high? Like they don't work together. Those numbers don't make sense together unless you look at it from that perspective.
Totally agree. I would add that he is a dynamic, electric athlete and got unbelievable change of direction. I would say potential negative there that maybe I haven't mentioned yet. I forget if I have. He's a little loose with the ball. You know, that's something that will get
just kind of hold it out here.
Yeah. My rule for Caleb in his first year, if I'm his OC or his quarterback coach or anybody near him, is do that. Again, you said you don't want to take the cape off him. One of the things I really do like is behind the line of scrimmage, he's got the ball up because he wants to throw it. He is not looking to take off, even though he is a dynamic and electric runner. As soon as you get past the line of scrimmage, buddy, 3-point that thing, because he'll just keep running like this, and you see the ball come loose. And the other thing about that is Caleb's bad ones seem to come in bunches. Like when he has a bad play, it's like 3 bad things. He retreats like 17 yards, takes it, and fumbles all in the same play. And you're like, bud, if you could take 5% of your negative plays out, including those really, really bad ones, you'd be a top 15 quarterback coming into the league, like on entry.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, I think it's a fine line, because when you're going to, so let's just pretend we're in the quarterback room and we're talking about this and we're saying, hey, on this practice film, protect the ball. Okay, what does that mean? Does that mean we want you to have 2 hands on the ball? Well, once he's got enough awareness, you see him do like the Patrick Mahomes peak, like he peaks behind all the time. It's got to be more important. The security of the ball has to be more important. And the way that it registered for me was always, don't make a bad play a disaster. Right. And sometimes it feels like, you know, those 5 bad plays that are going to come in a game, they can't be 5 disasters. They can be 5 sack, incompletion, throwaway. That's fine. can't have three picks, two fumbles. And not that that's a thing with him, but when you look across the other quarterbacks in this group, he is looser with the ball than anybody else.
Agreed.
The other part that I want to say back to the time to throw thing, I think he's got a great capacity to reset. So in the pocket, out of the pocket, that ability to reset your base and flip it is special. And the other part about it is I think you can talk about, people love to fucking talk about processor. He's a great processor. He's da 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 da. I think it's really hard, unless you're in the room, to know what's really being processed. But I think when you watch Caleb Williams' film, more than anybody else that we're talking about in the front part of this draft, he is processing the play. Like, you can see him go, da-da, I got to move, da-da, no, da-da, boom, flip. Like, more than other guys. We've already talked about Jane Daniels, like, half-field stuff. You know, we'll talk about other guys who don't even throw the ball past the line of scrimmage sometimes. You know, so, like, that. Yeah. There are many guys that have played a lot of football that are good pre-snap processing, and that's very coachable. You know where to go with the ball, have answers, see this, do this, no hot, do this. Caleb has that in-play processing where you can see him kind of register it across. Now, part of that is the system and how it's structured and can be quarterback friendly. But the other part of it is he's really good at it.
I want to get to J.J. McCarthy.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's got a J.J. McCarthy opinion. I don't know what yours is.
What's
so
yours?
So first, okay, I'll give you my J.J. McCarthy opinion, which is still in progress, right? And I said he was going to be the one that I finished last, because you have to watch a larger volume of Michigan games to
less
get
throws, but more volume.
Because you have to when you only have three far hash go balls the entire season. He's heard this diatribe from me over and over again. If you only have three far hash go balls the entire season, and two of them are against Purdue, you have to watch more games to get enough of a sample size of big boy NFL throws to understand if you can actually do it. Like, again, I told him this morning, the more I watch JJ, the more I like him. Well, I finally got to the East Carolina game where they started letting him, like, rip it, like, from the far hash, deep outs. I was like, oh, okay, well, there's three. All right, I'm up to, like, 15 in the last four games. But, like, I think I'm going to end up having to do 9-10 games of JJ pretty much the entire season, both when he was healthy and when he was not healthy, to get a full picture, just because there are games like Penn State where they only had to throw it eight times. And it's not really an indictment on JJ, like, they ran it 32 straight times because they could, but that is the reality of the evaluation. Is you have to watch more of him than anybody else to figure him out, and the more I watch, truly, the more I like. Now, is he going to be one of my top three quarterbacks like some other people have him? No, because I like a lot about Jaden. I like a lot about May. I love pretty much everything about Caleb. But the more I watch JJ, I can see the arm strength. I can see multiple clubs in his bag because he's got an arm. So it's like, if he needs to throw it on a laser, he can. If he needs to throw it with touch, he can. When he's on the run, I think he's got really good ball placement, specifically when he's on the run. But it's just trying to get to the point where I have enough throws that I feel comfortable is the hard part, because you have to watch basically every Michigan game to get the full picture with him. You can't do five or six games like the other guys.
Yeah, I don't think I would agree with a lot of that. I think the more I came into it, basically saying, like, what is all this? What is this about, man? Like, I don't understand it. Like, I'm just like, I watched Michigan play on TV. You watch them beat the hell out of people. You watch them win at the line of scrimmage. You watch the great run game. You watch the great defense. And you literally think, like, oh, you know, they could get someone from the stands to hand this off.
Yeah.
But then I think when you do turn on the film, he's a better athlete than I would have guessed. He can run it. I mean, I remember him running it from other years. Like, I feel like he was more of a runner maybe in previous years. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I never looked at the stats. But there are throws where you're like, yo, that's a Sunday throw in a Sunday mm-hmm. window versus, you know, middle field open, second level defender, back turned, perfect shot. Like, perfect read, decisive. Sunday throw, Sunday footwork, Sunday everything. But why is it only twice? You know, over the course of half a season. And again, you know, it's I'm comfortable saying it's more the system. The more they didn't have to do that, then he can't do that. Now, maybe we get into the league and we find out really quickly that, you know, he's not consistent and he's got all these other issues and that's why they didn't throw it very much. But I just don't think that they had to. I think he's coming from a place almost like an old school NFL type vibe where like mm-hmm. it's dated. Like it almost feels like it's in like a if he was coming out 15 years ago, everybody was like this. Like it was all kind of like this. The pro like had all, you know, big time. When you look at it, he can rip it. Like he can throw it. But you just don't see it. And it's like, I get frustrated watching the film. Like I think there were a couple times I did videos. I'm like, what the fuck, bro? I'm like, first and 10, run, TFL. Second and 10, or second and 11, penalty. Second and 16, run, nothing. Third
and those second and extra long runs kill me.
Third and 14. Hey, JJ, go get us a first. He does. Yeah. First down, run. Second down, run. Third down, run. First down, run. Second down. I'm like, what the fuck, bro? Like, throw the ball. Like, yeah. I'm getting frustrated for him. Like, I almost want to be like, how did you get recruited to do this? And so that part of it is really frustrating. But I think that there is part of that experience that can help a guy be successful in the league. Now, it depends on where you go. Obviously, that's a fucking caveat for everything.
Yep.
But like his experience at college could be very similar to what a successful career for him looks like in the league. Like there are some elements of handing the ball off. There is some elements of got to make it happen as a, you know, quote unquote manager in situational football and third down that he has a lot of experience with, a lot of clutch football that I think is a big tribute to it. But man, the body of work thing, there's just no getting past it. Like you have to be comfortable with being like, hey, you know, making sense of why they didn't do it. And I think there are valid reasons why you don't have him have to make those game-winning throws every single series. But for me, the more I watch it, the more I like. I think that there's going to be an element of rolling the dice. And there's certainly for me in the pit of my stomach, like this Herbertism of like, just why don't they do more of it? Because it could have benefited him and that team, I feel like, if they would have been more dynamic in the passing game. You know, maybe it's Harbaugh. You guys are going to find out down here soon enough. But like, you know, that's part of it.
Somebody had a quote, and I think you're going to like this.
Okay.
Somebody had a quote about J.J. McCarthy, and I can't remember who it was, but I loved it, which is, absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. And I was like, yeah, actually. Just because we don't see it doesn't mean it isn't real. And again, I'm not taking him as a top three quarterback in this class because it's not like we have evidence like positively, but going back to that, do we hold structure against somebody or do we hold supporting cast against somebody? I don't think I want to hold it against him because I look at a really coachable kid who's got good size. He's 6'3", 220, and that's real weight, by the way. Like, that wasn't just combine weight. Like, that is real weight. So he's got NFL size, NFL arm, super coachable, has experience under center, has experience turning his back to the defense and then flipping his eyes around, locating safeties, making throws. Again, it wasn't very much, but, like, he did it before. He still had more throws of that nature than a lot of guys that threw the ball 600 times this year just because of they were 99% gun. So I don't know. There's something there. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, and I'm not willing to make the extra leap that I see a lot of people making, which is when you're talking about absence of evidence, that they see it once and say he can do it and just fill in then he will do that when given the chance every time, which seems like the level of projection necessary to get him to the heights where people are talking about him as a top five player in this draft, as a top four quarterback. Like, yeah, he can do it, but we've seen a lot of, I think, of backup quarterbacks in the league, right? Every backup quarterback, most popular guy in town, right? Doesn't have to play, has potential. Everybody's like, yeah, yeah. The starter falters or gets hurt. Backup comes in. All his champions are super excited, and he has to go out and do it for 3 or 4 weeks in a row against DCs that are game planning for him. They get a little bit of tape, and they're like, and all of a sudden he's not the most popular guy in town. So I'm willing to say that JJ is a tremendous athlete, really good, especially in like deep red zone, short runs. He is sharp. Like, he was sharp early in his career, and he can absolutely gun it now, rip it between two guys and whatever else. So you started to see that. He already had the athleticism. And then there's just this lack of, yeah, we've seen it once. We've seen it three times. We've seen it five times. Is that going to hold over? Not to a 15-year ago NFL load where guys were like 12 for 18 with two drops, and that was really typical. I mean, you're throwing the ball 25, 35, sometimes 45 times a game. Is that going to hold up? All the things I like, size, athleticism, coachable, big game experience, love all that stuff. But I think the rampant projection is where I get real itchy and go, ooh, I'm not willing to say, like, just because I've seen it once, he will automatically do that given the chance.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's why all this shit's a crapshoot, right? Like, like, yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, I'll put it this way. Like, if we were in a personnel room right now and we had the third pick of the draft and it was, we were having Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, whoever else you want to insert sure. into this, I'm not comfortable saying that for sure one of those guys is better than the other. Or for sure that I feel better, that I would put a lot of money on one being more successful than the other. I mean, I just think that's the reality. Now, for different reasons.
Right.
But if I was looking at the film going, man, who would I want to hitch with for the next, you know, half a decade? It would be hard for me not to go J.J. McCarthy there. I'm going to be honest. Like, that's just the truth. Like, I see the big splash plays from Drake May, but I see him fucking skipping balls, man. I don't see that from J.J. McCarthy. Like I don't know. We'll see how it shakes out.
You're playing the odds. Like who has the best odds of me still being able to feed my kids?
Well, like, yeah, like who would I want to play quarterback for our system? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't feel great about it either, but like like I would probably do, like I would lean towards J.J. McCarthy. You know, that I don't think that's necessarily a knock on Drake May. I just like some of the stuff that I've seen from McCarthy looks more, and this is a term that people love to throw around this time of year, but like NFL ready, NFL like more of it looks like stuff you see consistently on Sundays than the other stuff. And so I just, yeah, would I love to see a higher volume of it? Yeah. No. Is he going to have to win a hell of a lot more games in the fourth quarter? Yeah. Are we playing fucking Rutgers this weekend? No. Like, we're playing every game is Ohio State. Every game. Every game comes down to the fourth quarter. And so it's just different, but that's different for everybody who comes into the league. Like, that's a shock for everybody. And so that part of it is, yeah, there's just not enough of it. But that's why what I do is so incomplete, because all these other teams bring people in, have those conversations. Is he more consistent in person? Can he make all these throws that we don't see him make on all this film? You know, and I, all those things matter. And, you know, that's why it's just looking off the film, though. I mean, I'm shocked at how much I like J.J. McCarthy the more I watch it. I haven't turned on the film and been like, oh, why didn't anybody tell me to watch this one? Like, you know, I've asked people, like, what film should I watch?
Yeah, Bowling Green is the one that everybody talks about, of like, watch the Bowling Green game. But I feel the same way about JJ with the Bowling Green game that I do with Caleb with the Notre Dame game and Drake with the Clemson game, because every one of these guys, just other than maybe Jaden, just has a bad game where you're like, oh god, right? But it's a bad game. It's not like it's half a season that they're in a slump and they just can't get out of it. Like, again, these are 20, 21 year old kids. Like, you're allowed to shit the bed once, right? Like, I don't necessarily hold a bad game against some of these guys, because again, I go back to my trauma of Herbert against Arizona State. You remember that?
I just think of it as a holistic trauma. you're making sense of it way better than I am. I'm still processing my trauma.
He just has the complete bag of trauma. That
I did a lot of therapy about that, you know. But like, again, I held that ASU game against Herbert so tightly, and I let it cancel out the Washington game when I shouldn't have. And so I, you know, Drake against Clemson, JJ against Bowling Green, I'm like, 21, fine. You can have that game.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I don't give a shit what anybody does against Bowling Green. No offense. Like, I just like, okay. Like, you know, it's one of those things for me. Your example of, hey, it's one game. For me, I'd never think of it as an issue for one game, one bad pick, one, you know, rough thing. I think of it as patterns of things that will be an issue on Sundays. And I just don't see a pattern. The only pattern that I see for J.J. McCarthy that's going to be an issue is the reason that there's not more volume a reason that is we don't know that is a real problem? And there's no way that I would find that out. I'm not going to like that. We're all going to find out together. But, I mean, you could say that about a lot of guys, and that, you know, that's why so much of this stuff is rolling the dice. But, like, what's on the film, the actual playing of the quarterback position, is going to work on Sundays. Now, is it what he's not being asked to do, he will be asked to do a little bit more of in the league. And if he can't, well, then it's gonna flame out pretty quickly. But I don't think that there's any reason to think that that's the case.
Two more top quarterbacks to go. Also, West Coast quarterbacks. Also, quarterbacks that we all got to watch at 8 p.m. while the entire East Coast was sleeping. Michael Penix and Bo Nix. They went at it a couple times. Two great games, back and forth. Penix obviously coming out on top both times, national championship run. They're less polarizing than some of the ones we've already talked about. I feel like there's more consensus of what they are and what they're not. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just I feel like both of them are a little bit easier to see the positives and not even negatives, but just, you know, what they're not, right? But I want to start with Michael Penix because valuations are all over the place for him. Like, everybody knows what he is, but everybody has a different valuation that they assign to his skill set. So for you, if you were a team picking anywhere in the first round, would you look at Michael Penix's skill set as a passer and say, I feel comfortable pulling the trigger that early?
I mean, depending on how early, sure. Yeah, yes.
In the 20s.
Yeah, yes. I personally love how Michael Penix Jr. throws the ball. I know aesthetically you got to get over the lefty issue. For some people, that's an issue. It is pushy. I would classify it as pushy, short, whatever you want to say. The stroke of it is different. I think I'm a little bit more comfortable with that because I spent a little bit of time around Phillip Rivers, and I was like, fucking Phillip is so pushy when he throws. But he threw a beautiful ball, super consistent. It didn't impact him at all. Quick release. I think when you turn on the film with Michael Penix Jr. in Washington, I know I say this a lot in my stuff, but I love that offense. Like, I love it. It is the tip of the spear, in my opinion, as far as college football offense holistically. Maybe not like if you segment it off, like run game, passing game, those types of things, but just like what they're doing scheme-wise, the creativity, how they use space, all those types of things, I straight up love. It's so unique, I think, and so it would be interesting to see what it looks like at a different places. So I'm jealous that he was in that cool system. I think that he throws a beautiful deep ball, maybe not as consistent as I would like. I thought that he missed. He had so many big plays, but he actually left a lot of plays out there sometimes too. I think he's a dynamic pocket passer. He's not the athlete. If you remember him at Indiana, you know, I think it was the Penn State game where he had that
2018, 2019. Yeah,
pre-multiple injuries. Dynamic athlete. Not that guy right now or maybe ever again. So that part of it, maybe he's not the same as some of these other guys we've talked about. But can move, can run around a little bit, just not as elusive and dynamic in that regard. But I think that there's a lot to like about Michael. Again, like all guys, depending on where you go, it's going to be different. Do I think he's going to be like, would he thrive in like a Shanny type under center move, old school movement boot? Probably not. I don't think he can't play under center. I just don't think of him like that. And so, you know, that would be my question as far as fit, where he goes, those types of things. But as far as pure spinning it, driving the ball down the field, got all the clubs in the bag, makes a lot of impressive throws. He had some really impressive like anticipation touch throws that you didn't see from everybody in this unit that we're talking about. So, you know, I think Michael's a really good player.
Extremely high level thrower of the football, extremely effective, surgical from the pocket. His ability to tear apart a defense and take what that offense, that very creative Ryan Grubb offense, was giving him was extremely good. Got even better this year. Had a good year last year. Had a great year this year. I know the big knock on Penix is that, you know, he doesn't play great outside the pocket when he gets flushed. And I think there's some truth to that. I think what gets lost in that is how good he is inside the pocket and manipulating that pocket and the damage he can do from there, which when you're talking about translation to, you know, is that a Sunday style of playing? It is. He's going to stand and deliver in there. Reminds me very much of younger Kirk Cousins in terms of not a guy that you're thinking is going to go outside the pocket and hurt you a lot, either laterally or down the field. Can run a little bit, like you said. Athleticism's been reduced a little bit, but if you let him stand in there and he has protection and he has weapons, look out. He is going to drill you to death, and he did it to the highest level defenses in college football all year long. Tough guy. I love that you bring up the throwing motion. You know what I had to do with him eventually so that I could watch him?
You reverse it?
Flip it?
Nope. I had to cover it because it's the push thing. I'm so glad you brought up the push thing. Everybody's like, it's because he's lefty. I'm like, it's not because he's a lefty.
No, yeah, it's pushy too.
It's because it's lefty and pushy, and it looks so wrong, but the result is so right. And I kept saying, look at where that ball lands. Look at the window he hit. Look at the timing. Like, look at the trajectory. And so eventually I just went like this when he threw it, and I just looked at the result. And I was like, and I loved it so much more. And I was like, okay. And then I could kind of get down to where I could just assume that despite that motion, the throw was going to be really good. But it took that, and I think a lot of people, the thing about Penix that feels really familiar to a quarterback that came out not that long ago is Jalen Hurts, right? Jalen Hurts, everybody had an opinion early in his career of what Jalen Hurts was. And then he, you know, moved, went stops, continued to develop as a player. And a lot of people, we were talking about this before the podcast, in the Midwest saw him in Indiana, went, oh, he's this. And I'm like, dog, if that's what you think Michael Penix is, that is incomplete. He is not the same in terms of athleticism, but he is so much more as a complete quarterback now than he ever was in his time at Indiana. You need to take another look. He has continued to progress, and he's a dangerous dude.
What I want to bring up is his value to a QB room, specifically to one QB room. And that's Seattle. Even if they don't go quarterback in the first round, it's possible that Penix is there in the middle of the second round. What kind of value would he bring as, say, Geno's backup / heir apparent? But what kind of value would he bring to that QB room as a translator? You know, as they're trying to, I guess, kind of remold this offense to what the NFL is. Like, I'm not saying you take out the soul of the offense that they had at Washington, but as they're trying to kind of reshape it around what the NFL game is, what value could Penix bring as Geno's backup to get him ready for this system?
That's a good question. The easy answer for, not the easy answer, the easy anecdotal answer for me would be, like, if you've ever traveled somewhere that speaks a different language and you meet a friend who's like living there and they're fluent and you go visit them, that trip becomes a hell of a lot easier.
Okay.
You know, like, you can pick up a few things, you can get the lay of the land, but like, they speak it. And so you're going to learn it faster, I think, when you get that personal, hey, this is how I play this play. This is the timing of this. This is what the expectations are. This is the reason we're calling this play. This is those types of things. Now, would a longtime NFL vet ask a rookie those types of things? You know, what that dynamic would be like? You know, there's a lot of history when it comes to tense quarterback rooms. I would think he would push him as much as anything and compete like hell, because I don't necessarily think anybody thinks Geno is like the, you know, 10-year answer in Seattle for that type of thing. But like, I think he absolutely could be a value add to be able to come in there and know the ins and outs of it. I also think that system is going to have to evolve probably a lot. Not a lot, but parts of it are going to not be, like, you can't get in all the 0x4 shit and like all the crazy formation stuff in the league that some of that they were
the
doing.
The space
with,
is different.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. We already talked about the hashes. Like, it's just different. It's a different game. But the creativity, the tip of the spear, the pushing it, those types of things, I think are transferable. So, you know, I think depending on where he goes and what it looks like, he throws the ball so well that he could be successful in anything. You just can't cookie cutter it. And I think the league is so much more flexible than it was back in the day, where they do allow guys to be themselves and don't say, hey, here's the script. We're all running the same script. Like, you know, what? Like, I do different things than the starter. I do different things than the backup. Like, why would we do that? And so some, you know, most teams are super adaptive when it comes to that. And I think depending on where Michael goes, he could absolutely kind of find his own lane and thrive really quickly just because he spins it so well.
This is kind of a random question, but in your experience, do receivers take a little time to adjust to the ball spinning the other way?
I don't know. You might have to ask a lefty. I'm trying to think if I was ever around a lefty. I'm sure receivers will complain about damn near anything.
That's true.
So, the answer is yes. I'm sure they fucking hate it. But like, I don't know. I think if it's, you know, if you can spin it, you can spin it is kind of the proof in the pudding with that. And guys can tell immediately. You know, you can't fake the funk when it comes to being able to spin it in the league.
Well, that brings us to our last guy, Bo Nix. Can Bo spin it? Have we seen enough throws past line of scrimmage where we can confidently say, like, yeah, he can do this?
Well,
guy's got 61 collegiate starts, and we're like, do we have enough tape?
Yeah, I mean, this is like a
fair point.
I'm gonna avoid it, the question, but also kind of bring my own angle to it. As someone who has Auburn alumni in the family, you know, I remember Bo Nix. And so that part of it is hard. But the other part that we haven't really talked about, and this goes back to a little bit about just how the landscape of college football has changed, the transfer thing is just so normal. Like, it's almost like a second career. I mean, he's had such a long career. He's had a couple careers. But, like, the player that he was at Auburn is not the same guy he has been at Oregon. And so it's hard for me to do the mental gymnastics of that. When I turn on the Oregon film, and again, the color scar, you know, all those types of things we referenced.
He was on the field for that Herbert year. When Herbert had the game against Auburn, he was against Bo.
Yeah. That's funny. Fuck. I, you know, as someone who just aesthetically, the way that I love football, I don't necessarily love how Oregon plays offensive football. I love the uniforms, don't love the colors, but love the completion percentage thing to me is just so artificial. It's just fucking, it's not real football. You know, you just can't go out there and have a C-plus average in the league. You're just not going to do that very often. You know, like, you're just not going to throw bubble screens and pedal screens and quick screens and all those types of things all the time. I think he is probably a better passer than I want to give him credit for down the field. I think he's a better athlete. I think he is a good athlete.
He's a very good athlete.
And so, you know, that part of it to me is matters. It does. But, like, when I see the artificial completion percentage and what that translates and projects to in the league, I just don't know. Like, it's not the same as, like, the J.J. McCarthy, hey, we didn't see it, he can't do it. I felt like, you know, over the course of, you know, what, 6 seasons? Like, I mean, the guy's played a ridiculous amount of football. He just he hasn't done it. And if I fall into the same Oregon trap again, you know, like, if he goes out there and now, you know, looks like Tua and Purdy next year, yeah, ripping wrap ins all over the middle of the field, I'm going to look like a clown. But, like, I just, a part of me thinks, like, it is what it is. You know, I think he's an older guy. Not that that matters, but I think you're closer to who you are. You know, it's hard to improve significantly at, like, whatever, late 20s than it is when you're, you know, 20. And so that part of it scares me a little bit, but it's not a deal breaker. I just feel like it is what it is. He's really conservative. I don't know if that's their system or not. I think it probably is a lot of their system. I think he likes the completion percentage thing. Like, every time I feel like I've seen him talk, it's been, completion percentage was da-da-da.
Can't go broke taking a profit. Yeah, like, that's his mentality.
I can tell you, I've been in NFL quarterback rooms where that saying is up there. Like, punting after a third down completion is okay. And that's a common phrase on every third down meeting. And so that part of exists. He can definitely do that. I just don't know, you know, of the guys we've talked about, he's probably the last of the guys that I would be like, hey, I would be fired up if this was our dude, you know, just from what we've seen in college. Because we've seen so much of it. And, it, you know, and again, to me, I think it's not apples to apples to say, hey, Michael and Bo went head to head multiple times, mm-hmm, but they did, you know, yep, kind of the same way. And I fall back to this fault of, like, I remember when Ohio State and Clemson with Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, mm-hmm, that mattered to me. Like, and maybe it's because I'm still too close to it, like, competitive wise, to be like, fuck that guy. Like, I fucking beat his ass multiple times. Like, well, you're going to draft him ahead of me? Like, yeah, it just doesn't register, even though I know they're not tackling each other. But it's just, for me, you know, I feel like everything we've seen so much of Bo Nix, to think he's going to come in after 60 college football games and be someone different in the league is harder for me to make sense of than, you know, what J.J. McCarthy hasn't been asked to do as the Michigan, you know, winningest quarterback, all those types of things.
He's being heavily linked to the Broncos because the Broncos have nobody right now. And out of all the teams that like kind of have to draft a quarterback, they're at the top of the list because, again, they need one. In your experience, in your understanding of what Sean Payton likes in a quarterback, does he fit?
I mean, I don't, this is going to come off sideways, but it's the truth. I don't know if I wish anybody to go play for Sean, like that, from what I hear from the outside in. I know that that system, Drew made that system look really good for a long time. And I think that they were, a decade ago, potentially the tip of the spear as far as what they were doing passing game wise. They also had some really cool weapons on the perimeter. I don't think it's an easy environment. I don't think it would be an easy environment even for a 25-year-old rookie to go be thrown into that offense. I think Russ did a pretty good job of kind of managing what that offense asks you to do, what Sean would like to do with Russ's skill set. I don't necessarily think Bo Nix is like such a premier passer that he's going to go in there and light the world on fire like a veteran Drew Brees did. And so there would be growing pains. It would be a tough situation. It's going to be a tough situation for anybody. You know, whoever goes in there, I would hope maybe has a little bit more of a robust evidence, club style, ability to do everything that they would want to do in that. I could see that being such a tough environment where you miss a throw in practice and like, fuck it, we're not throwing comebacks anymore.
So no Drake May is what you're saying.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's exactly.
can't do that.
Like, we just skipped a quick out? Like, we can't throw quick outs? Like, going crazy, you know, like, yep. Like a volatile, really, you know, like tough environment. And, you know, some people thrive in that. Some people, it doesn't matter. You know, maybe Bo Nix, it doesn't matter. It just washes off his back. He's like, fucking, it's not worse than Auburn. You know, like those types of things where like he could thrive in that environment. And there's a toughness element that comes that, you know, you don't know until you know, until you're in there, what it's like. But I think that's going to be a tough environment for any of these guys to go in and have success with right away. I say that, and then Sean will go out there and have the most fucking quarterback-friendly Oregon.
5,000 yards.
He'll have a B-minus average and just be getting completions everywhere. Crazy.
I mean, Bo Nix, you know, former quarterback's kid, former coach's kid. So I think none of that would come as a surprise to him. I do like that we talk about, you know, structure and the place people are going so much more and sort of so much more freely than we used to. It was sort of like, well, you know, I'm just talking about skills and we're just going to drop them in a system and it'll all be the same. And I think we've all progressed and evolved from that. But what I see with Nix and the flashback I had on the sideline at the U of O Pro Day is, yeah, he throws a million screens, but man, he's got a big arm. Like, he's got a very solid arm. You talk about him being older as a downside, but it also means he is completely done growing. That guy is filled out. He's extremely solid. He's quick in the short area, just like JJ is in terms of his athletic movement gifts. He can run it. He didn't get asked to run it a lot, but he is a big, strong dude at quarterback. Can really throw it down the field to Troy Franklin. We saw that a bunch. He didn't do it a ton. The numbers don't play that out, and I don't love, like you don't love, that that's the first thing off his lips is, oh, completion percentage is high, because unadulterated completion percentage is probably one of all of our least favorite statistics. But when you see the physical skills, and I thought I had that moment of abject fear, oh, what if they just didn't ask him to? Like, what if he really wants to rip it? Because he can. And it's the same as Herbert. Everybody's like, well, he just didn't, so I guess he can't. And then, of course, he has the rookie year he does. I'm not saying that Nix is the same guy as Herbert, but I had that little moment of panic watching him at the pro day. Again, pro day, thrown against air. It's supposed to look good. But I went, well, what if we're all just sort of underrating this guy that's super experienced, great athlete, doesn't really have a strong injury history, you know, has a long history with the game. Maybe he can. Maybe he is one of the most ready to run in and say, hey, I can do other things physically and mentally. And I was just like, oh.
Yeah. This just sounds like a group therapy session. Yep. Show me where Justin Herbert hit you.
But just imagine being in these decision rooms where you're like, bro, are you? I'm not attaching my trailer to maybe. Maybe they just did that. Like, we could all get on the phone and ask the coaches. Like, that, obviously, the things that were sure. The gaps that we're leaving are gaps that they would figure out, or that you would hope that they would investigate. But like, it's slightly different for the Herbert thing for me, because he didn't do that shit at Auburn. Yeah. Like in my mind,
so you know, it's two yeah. staffs. Oh, yeah. Three staffs, yeah. I think technically.
Yeah. So yeah. like, yeah. you know, it's a little bit different. And I know many of these guys transferred and not all transfers are the same story. But like, if that was the issue there and yeah, you came to a better, a different program, we'll call it a different program, different type of football, sure. and you thrived. It's really, to me, it's as much a tribute to him as it is that staff for making it work, you know, as opposed to maybe some other guys where you're like, or Jaden, where you're like, hey, Arizona State, you weren't going to win the Heisman there the way you were playing. You go to LSU, it's a little bit more structured. You got a lot more ballers around you. All of a sudden, you're thriving. It's kind of making sense of what that looks like. But when I turn on the Jaden Daniels film and see his stroke, his consistency, his decisiveness, the way he's playing, the way he can make plays, the way he can run, and then I turn on the Oregon film, it's not the same.
No.
And so, you know, to me, it's one of those things where if I was sitting in the teens and I was going to be like, well, we need a dude, well, like, it would be hard to turn on the Oregon film and be like, well, those are our answers.
Yeah.
Now, maybe you're right. Maybe the pro day is the theater that we all need.
Teens is not the territory I was talking about. But in terms of a guy that's getting talked about a lot less, I think he's sort of presumptive second tier. And when I listen to a lot of people talk about Bo Nix, it's sort of the end of the second tier kind of add on, like, again, older guy, low A dot, like, hey, he's a dude, like, he'll be a number two. And I'm like, I'm not sure that's all he's gonna be. Would I take him like hop two in the teens? No, I wouldn't.
Is there anybody that's really jumped out at you? You know, somebody's gonna go on either day two, maybe even day three. Somebody that you're like, oh, okay, if we don't bite the bullet and take Nix in the teens, but we still need a guy. We still need somebody who maybe we can throw in there and pray. Is there anybody outside of that group that you're like, okay, I feel decent about that?
Yeah, I would say the two guys that jump up are Spencer Rattler and Joe Milton. I mean, I think Joe Milton for me is a guy who, when you just look at like him throw the ball on the film, you're kind of like fucking smiling the whole time. Like, this is crazy. I think I have major issues with that system. I think it's just hard as hell. It was hard with Hendon Hooker. Great. You know, what are you doing with the vertical choice shit? Like, the splits are hilarious. It's just different. But like, throwing the ball 80 yards is different too. You know, like, and then just the, you know, if you could go somewhere that this coaching staff wasn't hot, that the starter was, you know, a dude who could help, who wouldn't feel overly threatened, like Kansas City, you know, where like it's established, dog. And he could go learn and thrive and then get his opportunity at some point. That skill set, those people like that don't walk around. Like, those are unicorns of unicorns. And so it's that part of it, you just can't fake the funk with a dude who can spin it like that. And so that would be someone I'd be interested where they end up. But again, why didn't it work at Michigan? Didn't really work at Tennessee all the time. You know, those things are, you know, you got to make sense, all that shit.
Have you done Michael Pratt from Tulane yet?
I have not. I need to.
Then you got Jordan Travis still on the list, I assume, right?
I've done some Jordan Travis, but it was probably last summer. I didn't do any of his stuff before he got hurt this year.
I think you might like him. You know, again, not expecting a first-round grade.
I remember liking. I don't remember. I remember being like, I don't know who this is, but everybody keeps telling me to watch it.
Yeah. Now, again, everything, it's, you know, we're in the gun, three-step, ball out, quick, but also a very vertical offense because you got Keon Coleman and you got Johnny. Like, they were a loaded offense similar to LSU, just not quite to the same degree, but it's he has a lot of traits, and EJ and I talked to him at Shrine Bowl too. He has a lot of traits that are similar to Jaden Daniels as a thrower. Oh, really? I would say
is he a big guy?
No, he's smaller.
He's not as tall. He has the same build. He's slender. He's just over 200 pounds. But one of the things that line up very closely between those guys, because there's a lot of things that aren't, but the two things that line up really closely for Jaden and Jordan for me are that sort of machined consistency. And we talked to him about this at Shrine Bowl. I said, man, it doesn't matter whether you're throwing a negative 2 yard pass, a 5 yard pass, a 7 yard pass, a 20 yard pass. Like, your set is the same, the delivery is the same, and the accuracy is the same in terms of letting your guy have the best place. Now, whatever that is, that changes you know as well as anybody that changes with the club, the throw of the bag, right? But he talks about throws where, nope, I threw that on his back hip because the linebacker was kind of lurking and I didn't want him to get killed. Or, no, I put that ball three yards out in front of him so he could run and go get it and have a head of steam before, you know, he had to deke that defensive back and go another 60 yards because my running back's amazing. But, like, he has a full understanding of that, and it's that sort of machined consistency in his motion, and the results are pretty consistent. We talked about consistency. I'll bet you like that. But great guy, great leader, very, I would say, even keeled.
Like, yeah, nothing really fire, bothers him.
But
yeah,
you can tell it's kind of the lurking part. He's not going to be one of those boisterous, like, quote machines. But at the same time, if you ask him, oh, I don't know, like how he felt about the national championship snub,
yeah,
he's got an opinion. He's prepared, and he does have that, like, I believe we got wronged 100%.
It's the lack of high-end physical tools that will not allow him to be drafted super high, but he's got long-time high-end backup written all over him. So I think you might like him.
I will say that the analogy I remember watching, the little that I watched with him, when you talk about the consistency of the stroke, one of the biggest compliments I think you can give a quarterback, especially a young quarterback, is you're a jugs machine. And that's just like a pitching machine. But not all jugs machines are the same, right? So I coach a lot of little league baseball, youth baseball. Like, a lot of little league pitching machines only go up to like 55, 75. Then you can buy those three-wheelers that have like up to 110. Well, not everybody's got the three-wheel, you know, stroke. And I think a little bit with Jaden Daniels of this is he's got some jugs machines to him, but he doesn't throw that like heater, like that 98 mile an hour heater. And that's kind of how I think of Jordan Travis, just in a smaller package. And, one of the biggest compliments I can give somebody, a quarterback, is when you're in there, you elevate the unit. You are a difference maker on that offense, no matter who's around you. And when he wasn't in there, he was the difference maker. And so that, you know, that's a big compliment to him in his college career.
And his guys love him. We talked to several of his teammates at Shrine, and I mean, like, take a bullet for that guy. Love him.
He's going to be good in the room.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this was a jam-packed episode, a long episode. Happy to finally get to do this in person.
For sure. And I appreciate the invite. This is quite the setup, y'all. This is awesome. I had a blast.
Thank you for making the trek up the coast. I can assume we'll have you back on next year. Talk next year's quarterback class.
Hell yeah. Sounds like we might have to do like some Korean barbecue or whatever the hell you did last night. Take this thing to the next level.
That's right. Yeah, we are just...
crank it up.
We had a lot of bulgogi. Okay. A lot. Maybe too much bulgogi.
Maybe a little bit.